Hey, it's great to be here in North Dakota. I really appreciate the hospitality that you folks have warned us and given us. Steve, thank you, and thank you to the rest of North Dakota Angus people. I feel like I'm here with all my friends. Besides doing my job, I fiddle around with Angus cattle as well, and John Crouch knows that, and that's my long love. My father started in the business in the mid-1960s, so I've got a few years of Angus behind me, so I'm amongst my friends, and I definitely appreciate the invitation here. And I think if you'll follow along with a lot of extension people throughout the country, it'd be amazing, Ron Lemonager, how many of us do have a little interest in Angus cattle, isn't that right? So, again, it's great to be here, and I definitely am going to try to move through so you get a chance to hear what some of the other folks have to say today, but I really, really appreciate the opportunity to be with you. Today, I'm going to try to just lay out some very simple things and try to encourage you to be the best that you can be. And that's really what we're all trying to do is do the things that will allow us to be the best that we can be. And I had a very nice conference call with the Angus staff here a while back. Let's see if I can make the slide deal work here. And the first question I had to ask was, what's this TAKE business? We've got TAKE initiative as our theme, and you see this word TAKE all the way through there. And I've got the topic TAKE the time, and I'm really not sure what that means. I'm really not sure. I hope you figure that out by the time we get done. Then we've got another guy following me up to TAKE it to the bank. I can kind of understand that topic. That relates really well. And then we've got one that's called TAKE Care. Well, care, that kind of makes sense, an animal health thing. And TAKE Charge. Are you doing that, Crouch? I think that's what Johnny's going to do a little later on. And then TAKE Ownership. And Matt, are you doing that? I think you're doing that. Well, anyway, I was in the process of talking with Matt about this whole thing. And then we've got a group of producers later on this afternoon that TAKE Me, for instance, and that makes sense. And I was visiting with Perry about this. What's all this TAKE business? He says, well, sometimes the job goes well, and it was kind of TAKE this job. And I think that's what was going on. So I'm up at the top, so I've got to try to do that. And I bring up the Army logo here because I really believe that when we look at what you're here for today is for gosh sake, be all that you can be. And I love their motto. I don't love the Army, but I love their motto, be all that you can be, because I think that is really important as we look at what we're doing here and what we're trying to do. And I think most of all, as we look ahead in our industry, be prepared, because what we've got to deal with today and what we're likely to deal with in the future, we do have to become as well prepared as we possibly can. And I want you to understand that hopefully as I go through today in my short presentation, that's what I'm going to be emphasizing, is how you can be prepared. Because we all know what can happen if we're not prepared. If you remember what happened back on August 14th, that was only a little over a month ago. You all remember what happened, right? We probably are going to have a lot of babies born this coming May. And they're all going to be in the Northeast. Being prepared is one of those things that we have to be. And, of course, our Canadian friends that are here with us, they also know that what can happen, and sometimes you just can't be prepared, can you? You just can't be prepared for things that can happen to us in this industry. And certainly, I've never had a lower sinking feeling in my life than the day I got my first email in relationship to BSE that hit Canada and our friends up there to the north. And certainly trying to be prepared for everything is not in all possibilities. So we have some things that come down the pike that make it very, very difficult for us, to say the least. How many of you are Angus breeders? Let me get a poll here. Oh, there's more than two. Well, that's good. I'm glad to see that. How many Hereford breeders do we have here? You admit it. You're in the right place. You are in the right place. Well, I want to see how well you're prepared to be looking at the future. And I just love George Carlin. I grew up on him when I was in school. And I have a couple questions I want to ask you to determine how well you are prepared. Do you know, whoops, I went the wrong way here. Do you know why the person that invests your money is called a broker? How many know that? Can I visit with you afterwards? I'd like to know why they're called brokers. I guess maybe after the last crash we all know, huh? Well, I didn't see a lot of you just jumping up and answering that question. If you couldn't answer that one, then let's try one more here. Do you know if Lipton tea employees take a coffee break? Do they? I don't know. I just don't know that one. So I'm not very well prepared. What hair color do bald men put on their driver's license? Where's Crouch? You lie. Well, I don't know that one. That's a good one. Okay, I know that you'll be able to answer this one. I just, as Angus breeders, I know you're very sharp and you'll be able to answer this one. What happened to preparation A through G? Well, what? He's got a million of them, and I tell you, I love those, but I like to have a little fun if we can. So if you can't answer these, I imagine you're maybe questioning your preparedness, you know. But all seriousness, I think that getting ourselves prepared is really important, and I think the whole topic that I'm going to talk about is taking the time to get prepared. And certainly, as you look at this conference and you look at this tour, I think you need to think about how can I better prepare myself. It's not necessarily that me and Barry and Ron Lemonager and the rest of us are going to be able to give you that much, but hopefully you can use this thing to hone your skills and improve your business strategy and savvy. That's what this is all about. Being able to visit with your contemporaries and finding out what they're doing that's a little bit different, and how you might be able to steal something and take back to South Carolina or California or Arizona or wherever you might be. I think that's really what we're all about. So take the time to plan for success. That's what it all is. And what is success? If you look at Webster's dictionary, it says a degree or measure of favorable outcomes. And I think Barry will probably talk about favorable outcomes financially, hopefully here in a little bit. If you look at a quote that I love from Sir Winston Churchill, it's one that I kind of like to say, hey, if you don't live by this, then maybe you shouldn't be in the cattle business. But success is the ability to go from one failure to another with no loss of enthusiasm, you know? And that's really what it comes down to. What can we do that will keep our enthusiasm going and keep us on the straight? What best describes a successful cattleman to me? And I've been in this business helping producers for 29 years, and certainly I don't know that I have any magic formula for it. But to me, successful cattlemen are talented in many, many areas. They can balance a lot of balls in the air at one time. They can just get her done. You know, certainly they're well-organized people. They have to be, because they do have a lot of different facets in their business that they have to take care of. Balancing jobs and being able to communicate with other people. And especially the job that you folks are involved in is communication is terribly, terribly important, and one that I can't help but think you have to think about. Having vision, as you look at honing your success traits, I think vision is really important. And hopefully, as you go through the next 3 days with this conference and tour, you'll start to see some different visions, or maybe nightmares. I don't know which, but hopefully they're visions. And it kind of reminds me that from a vision standpoint, probably the one guy that has as much vision back in his day was Albert Einstein, and he had a quote that imagination is more important than knowledge. And I think certainly as I think through here, you've got to have some imagination as you look at positioning your operation. It's very important if you want to be successful in this business. There's a lot of things that describe success, and I'll try to very quickly highlight those key words and then get on with some of the other items that I wanted to talk about. But certainly, being astute in this business, I think, is terribly important. Being a goal setter and carrying through with goals, I can't underemphasize. And being customer-oriented, especially. And probably the king of being able to be customer-oriented, although we have variations of opinions on that, I'm sure, is Bill Gates. And if you follow Bill Gates at all, you'll know that in many times he says your best knowledge comes from your most unhappy customer. You know, you've got to listen. You got to listen to what they're unhappy about and say, hey, can I change this part of the operation and make it so that I won't have unhappy customers? So keeping that in mind, you need to take the time to listen to those people, because they're your bottom line, really, when it comes to sales. So keep those customers in mind. Other items that come to mind as I think about being successful in this business is taking action, being flexible, having agility, if you will, with your business plan, and actually thinking through what your business plan is. I think it's very important. Having that competitive drive, I look at some of the people that I've known over the years that I term as very successful in the business. They really have a passion and a drive to get the job done. But yet, they don't try to run over people. They are compassionate. So, you know, keep all of these kind of things in mind as you look at your business. And certainly, I gather that Steve Brooks, you wouldn't have got this award here just a little bit ago if you weren't not only competitive but had a lot of compassion for your fellow breeder up here in North Dakota. And as we look at that, that's a trait that all of us have to eat a little humble pie once in a while and make sure that we are compassionate. And especially, we have to be good communicators to be successful in the seed stock business. And I find that that's one thing that Angus breeders really excel at. They are good communicators and do a great job. An unknown quote, but as I look at it, and I've become more mellow as I get older, as I work with a bunch of our field staff at Iowa State, and there's no question that communication is a universal solvent when you look at getting things to happen and happen as a team. So that's another trait that I look at and find very, very important. The other success traits that I very quickly come up with is tenacity. Certainly being tenacious in your approach to getting something done is one that most people in this business don't take lightly. Working smart, because we have more balls in the air all the time, our operations are bigger, involve more people. Certainly, we are having to work smarter all the time. Positive outlook, can't overemphasize that. Nobody likes that negativism out there, and certainly being positive is very, very much in my mind as I look at a lot of people. And then finally, courage. Courage, to me, is one of those things that, you know, you sit there, you've got it in your gut, and you say, God, I know that's right, but do you have that courage? Do you have that next step in you to say, I'm going to take that chance? And I used to be a very avid watcher of John Wayne, and I love John Wayne's quote. I just love it, and you North Dakotans, you'll love this one as well, but courage is being scared to death, but saddling up anyway. And that sticks with me because sometimes it's you got to take a chance, and it takes courage to take that chance. So think about that. And then finally, as we look at you as a breeder out here and as a group of breeders, you know, your reliability and integrity is paramount in importance. And providing that information with unquestionable accuracy, I think, is quite good. Old Mark Twain had a very, very good saying that he used, a lie can travel halfway around the world while the truth is putting on its shoes. How many of you been experienced to that one, huh? A few of us, I know. That's and it's so true. Ralph Waldo Emerson, a few years ago, said, nothing astonishes men so much as common sense and plain dealing. And I think that being reliable about how you deal is especially important in this industry today. Then as we look at the final traits that I'd say we all have to make sure we think about, accuracy, making sure that we do our absolute best to provide the best information possible to our customers is very, very important. Continuous learner, I think a lot of you are here hopefully to strengthen that. Learning from your comrades that are here with you at this conference is certainly one that is important. And then finally, a joy in sharing success. As I look at some of the breeders that I've seen and think are, have been very successful in this business, they don't take the credit, they spread the credit amongst everyone that they work with. And that is so, so important to build that family of people that are making your business work and work very well. So having that joy is and sharing your success is terribly important to your business plan as you look at your future. So maybe I ought to get on with the rest of this and tell you a little bit about that. But I really, when I looked at this whole topic of take the time, you know, to me, taking the time yourself is really one of the most important things that you're doing here. And that is take the time to hone some of those things that will make you successful in the future. And I was compelled to think that that was probably as important as anything else we'll talk about today. I'm going to talk a little bit about where some of the things are going in relationship to the meat marketing trends and how some of these might impact you in a very quick, short fashion here, because I think that that will get built on as you go through the rest of your conference here today and the next couple, 3 days as you travel around the state. To do that, I want to take a little trip down memory lane. Share with you at least some thoughts that we've had at Iowa State and where things have been and why maybe we're going where we're going. You know, if you look back, and some of you I notice have gray enough hair that you can remember pre-World War II. Some of you were in that baby boom era like me. And so you've been through a lot of this. But as you look at things in the past, during that pre-World War II, it was maybe, from a household standpoint, just give me something to eat. That was the important thing. They didn't care much about anything else. Product innovation, it was non-existent at that time. Brands weren't well established. A few were, but not very well. Processing and marketing were totally disconnected in our industry. We basically knew where our food was coming from because we had a lot of people producing food. And a high percentage of our income was spent on food. Well, things have changed a little bit. After World War II, we have what I call the June Cleaver era. Does anybody know who June Cleaver is? Leave It to Beaver? Oh, yeah. That was the June Cleaver era. Leave It to Beaver. How many watch Leave It to Beaver? Yay! God, there's a few people my age. That's great. That was my favorite. Beav? Oh, man, he was really good. Well, the June Cleaver era was a really a big one as you look at it. Back then, we were really into that, really getting things cranked up. Consumers could buy more, but we're not used to choices yet. Commodity producers owned the market and drove the demand for our brands. No communication up and down the production and marketing line. There wasn't any communication. If anything, it was adversarial, of course, back then. We had the beginning of emotional marketing. We just had that starting. And the processor was the driver of the industry. That's kind of where we were back in that time period. If you look at the late 60s and early 70s, we got into what we call an era of concentration. Does anybody know who that guy is? Huber, you betcha. That was taken in Iowa when he was on the path to try to become president of our great country. He was kissing pigs back then, and that was the popular thing to do to have that take place. But the era of concentration was a commodity wholesale companies created brands, and they started proliferating some brands. The efficiencies were everywhere, and people really started to crank up on efficiency of production. It took less money to buy from a consumer standpoint, and they had a lot more choices during that era of concentration. Processing and packaging increased, but we really didn't, from a producer standpoint, we didn't see the food anymore, if you will. We didn't know the consumer out there. So we really had a great deal of concentration. The consumer really started to become totally disconnected from their food system and their food supply. And of course, today you know what that's like. The number of people connected to the land dropped dramatically, and I know we still have a hurt inside in relationship to that era of concentration. Certainly we actively isolated the consumer from our production. And and that's really, as I look back, the time period when our beef councils in our state at least started to try to ward that off by making trips to some of the major cities. It was a good effort, but probably not as effective as what we really thought it should have been. Then producers really no longer saw and touched the food as they knew it. That really was during that era. Well, and now, if you will, we've gotten to what I would call into the Walmart model era, where things have changed and changed quite dramatically in relationship to our supply. Information flowing is the Walmart methodology. Organizing information, track the consumer behavior. Retailer is calling the shots with processors, and they want to include everyone as a customer to make the greatest number of sales possible. Certainly exclusionary policy were starting to be developed for suppliers. So it really changed a lot. And today, are we switching even further? I think that, I'm not sure I know, but it does appear that maybe the consumer is becoming more of a powerful agent than what they were in the past. They want to know a lot. At least that's what we're being told. Now, I'm not sure that all of the consumers want that, but we certainly have a minority that do want that. Our global product expectation is getting higher. World competition may dictate what we have to do in the future. And I hate to tell you that, but that's the trend that seems to be coming about. As we look at source and animal identity, that's becoming more of a mainstay, verifying our production processes, quality assurance, production supply chains, and cattle care guidelines. Those are the buzzwords that you're going to be living by here in the next decade or so. So don't expect those to go away. Our world competitors are doing that. You need to understand that. At the 2003 NCBA meeting, Paul Clayton with USMEF, Steve, was on one of the meetings and gave a report back then as to what the other countries are doing in relationship to identification of our product and how they're identifying their livestock. And at that time, we had 11 countries that had ear and tail tagging systems so they could track those livestock through the packing facilities. Electronic IDs were being utilized in two countries, with three countries planning to put that into place. Then paper trails, so they could follow those livestock with a paper trail in five countries with one planning, computer tracking, and birth-to-consumer tracking in five countries. So, and that's not going to go away. They are our competitors. We're going to have to step it up in relationship to that. News you don't want to hear, I know that, but I think you need to understand that's where our competitors are going. End product side of things, certainly case-ready revolution is here. It is here in a big way. Branded beef, you all know about that, and it's here, and it's big time. And how is that going to affect the grid marketing programs and what you're trying to do as a breeder? I think it can be fairly big. The look of case ready is there. Its impact is huge. Instead of forcing the packing industry to sell beef with zero trim, where we were at a quarter inch trim with our seam fat. So that's taking place. And is that going to have an effect on us? I think so. I think it's going to have an effect on us as we look at the future. I'm not going to spend time. I get a kick, Matt Perrier and I were talking about this, of going through many of the websites and picking up things. But Tyson IDP's website talks about the case-ready product and what it offers, and certainly it offers a great deal to their customers, and I'll flash through these while I just highlight a couple of them, but certainly it allows you to do more directing of your labor, so you're more efficient at the grocery store, reduces your marketing losses, enhances sales, you're able to have more product in the showcase, certainly it gives you directions on how to cook all the products, enhances food safety, and all of these are advantages that they're touting to the Case Ready program that they're offering. So it's a big one. How much impact will it have? These are recent numbers that I was able to pick up. Back in the year 2000, about 9% of all our beef sales were in Case Ready. 2001, it doubled to 18%. Expected this year somewhere around 35%. And by the end of the decade, they're expecting that maybe to approach up to 80% of all of our fresh meat sales to be Case Ready. That's going to have an impact. Will this cause a change in grid markets and the way people are going to market cattle in the future? I think it will. I think it will have a major impact. As far as branded beef programs, maybe we've leveled off a little bit in that arena. We really had a huge peak. This is the USDA certified beef programs. We've approached almost 60 different branded beef programs in June of 2001. We trailed off. We seem to have a leveling effect here about the last 2 years in those programs. However, that's not to say that our heat and eat type of products aren't proliferating, and thank goodness that they are. That's had a major impact in relationship to beef sales. Those products that are coming out, the heat and eat or the convenience items are really, really special. So what all these changes mean, I'm not sure I have the best crystal ball in the world in relationship to how they are going to affect us. As you look at the change in things in relationship to the industry, certainly we're going to see fewer cattle sold on a live basis and more of them going into grid markets. A recent survey that was taken by Ted Schroeder at K-State, along with my boss John Lawrence and a couple other economists, showed that by the time we hit 2006, we're expecting the number of cattle sold on grid markets to be at 62%. That's what the cattle feeders told us in the survey. So we're going to see that come. As far as industry trends, I don't know. On the commercial side, there's quite a few of them out there that probably you'll see. Supply chain development from cow-calf through the feedlot. I think we'll have some more, if you will, vertical cooperation take place. We've had some setbacks, but I think that will continue to go. More retained ownership. I think people are going to want to capitalize on their genetic and management decisions at the cow-calf level. I don't see that going away. I think from your angle, there's going to be greater demand on the seed stock side to make sure that you produce a product that that correctly puts those cattle in that supply chain with high value. A refocus on profit traits, I think that certainly is going to take place from the commercial industry, especially as they look at efficiency, reproduction, feed conversion, and those types of things. Continued pressure to develop animal and environmental friendly systems, and that is not going to go away. That is going to stay with us, and that will be ever present in all of our business planning. As far as other items that I see, supply chain access will require some source and process verification in the future. Market targets, I think, are going to become better defined as we go through time. Certainly, I hope we'll see more easier access to end product data. That hopefully is going to come. I've been saying that for 5 years, okay, so maybe it won't. But I sure hope that our end product data will be easier to get hold of. Database management is going to be very important to the commercial industry, and certainly high-valued reputation cattle are going to have some years of data on that. If we look at it from the seed stock side, you all know Dr. Ritchie, Harlan Ritchie at Michigan State, probably has done as good a job of looking at what he thinks the future lies in relationship to the seed stock industry. But you're going to have to be more multi-purpose as you look at it. The laundry list is here for you to look at and what niche you put in. But I do see a number of our seed stock producers are rallying to this task. I think most of all, you're going to have to be informational managers. And I really appreciated what Scott presented yesterday in the AIMS program area. He gives you a chance with that software that the American Angus provides to you to hopefully make you better informational managers. As we look at other trends in the seed stock industry, as I mentioned, the commercial industry is going to have emphasis on profit traits. I think that's going to also be the case for you folks. We're going to have to look at additional things in relationship to reproduction, health, and efficiency. Those really are the next frontiers for you people to be attacking. We've got to get the job going in relationship to that. Certainly, this last spring, we had a conference at Iowa State, the John Airey Beef Cattle Symposium, and this was for research people. And we had five world-renowned animal geneticists at that program. I'm not going to talk about all of them, but the one thing that they came in and every one of them talked about was where they're headed in relationship to gene mapping, gene markers that relate to the animal disease area, and what they're trying to get accomplished. And we kind of went, duh, what are we doing here? And if we want to maintain ourselves as a world source for high-level genetic stock, we're going to have to bite the bullet and start getting better in our information keeping and reporting so that we can look at these entities. And it all starts right here. It all starts here with you folks that are in the process of doing that. Other items, the role of molecular genetics, as we look at it in the future, is not going to diminish the importance of EPDs, nor of phenotypic recording. In other words, recording what's going on in your herd. Dr. Jack Decker's on our staff, an excellent molecular geneticist that works at the combining markers with EPDs. He is emphatic about that, that what you're doing in relationship to recording items and getting EPDs produced is still terribly important to this industry, and it's not going to go away. And finally, if you look at it, I think due to the increased number of EPDs and the gene markers, your next level of education, as you look at it for the science of what you're trying to deliver to the commercial man, is you're going to have to become more astute in relationship to combining that information together into selection or profit indexes. I think that that has to be done because you already, I've talked to two or three of you here, and you say, you know, my customers just don't understand. The problem is there's too much to understand, and in addition, they're trying to plant wheat, making sure they have the right wheat variety, take care of their herbicide programs, they've got grass management, they have all of those other entities that they're trying to balance. And so we've got to look at new approaches to using this information so that we can get the job done and get it done correctly. Well, just very quickly, some closing thoughts, and I'll get off. While you're here, make sure you try to improve your competitive edge. That's important. Try to better understand each other's problems. I think it's really a very important part of what you're here to find out. Improve your communications with customers. It has to be a continuous process all the way along. And do your best to learn some new skills. I think that's bottom line going to be very, very important to you. And finally, take the time, and I really get a kick out of this guy, some of the quotes Yogi Berra has. When you come to the fork in the road, take it. And that's really what it comes down to when you look at a lot of these things that we do. You know, we're not sure which fork to take, but by God, you got to take one. All right. I appreciate your attention here this morning, and I look forward to our conversation later on this afternoon. Thank you.